This is Camille Kajiri, and you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. And so you should. Keep your finger on the button and don't stop listening, because there's nothing better anywhere else.
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up. Welcome to episode 448 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we are, we will have thought long and hard about the last hour of minced memories and everything that they could mean, or are completely meaningless. You know, time is funny, you know? I'm Kier.
I'm Haley.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Julie. This week, Chris Chibnall receives word that fans are scrambling to understand the Doctor Who Flux storyline and turns the fast editing chaos dial to 11 in Once Upon Time. The runtime is under 50 minutes, but it feels like there's a lot more than that packed into Chapter 3.
The finger snap that Swarm would have used to send time coursing through Yaz and Vinder was buffeted by the Doctor and Dan jumping into it, and now all four are caught in the time storm.
The fugitive Doctor, dun-da-da, is reconnected to the greater storyline with a series of jarring don't-trust-what-you-see flashbacks.
The flux damage seems pretty irreversible as we see eradicated planets now being scrabbled over by Daleks, Cybermen, and Santarans. A strange swirl of blue particles is sweeping around the aftermath, cleaning house of survivors it finds.
And we finally get a fuller understanding of the Vinder character, his connection to the Division, his moral compass, and his tragically distanced relationship with the storytelling survivor, Bell.
The Dalek sector is growing. I thought I'd made it out, but they just keep spreading. Because since what some people keep calling the beginning of the end, who is there left to stop them?
Seems to be a very different opening sequence by Chris Chibnall standards. This whole idea of this this love story of sorts, these star-crossed and star-scattered lovers between Bell and Vinder, has, I felt, more of a Stephen Moffat or even a Russell T. Davies feel to it. And it didn't really seem like anything that in the previous two series that Chibnall had ever really explored. The idea of two people trying to keep this together while all hell is breaking loose around them, even down to the point of Bell telling this dying Cyberman that her mission is love. And you idiot, and taking him out. How did that work for everyone here in the midst of, you know, in this third installment of this raucous miniseries?
I didn't hate it. It was good to get something to, I don't know, build out Vinder's character and give him more life outside of just this adventure with the Doctor.
Mm-hmm. I personally loved it, because from the first time we see her and you learn that she is searching for someone, I don't know why, but my brain immediately went, I really hope she's going for Vinder. Like, I hope that's who she is looking for.
Really?
And so through the whole thing, I'm looking for those clues. I'm looking for that connection. And that was how it played out in my brain. Had no idea I was going to be right, but but it worked for me. And I loved her character. She was the right, her whole performance was just perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was probably my favorite parts of this episode.
See, I figured it had to be Vinder or Ruth's Doctor, which would have also been interesting, but
it gave me more of an interest in like, I want to see their backstory. And so something, mm-hmm. like I said, I think before, that Vinder was talking to someone, we just didn't know who. Mm-hmm. And so now that we know who it is, it just, to Jay's point, puts those pieces together. And I want to know how they met. I want to know, based on the little snippet that we got of him in his military, like, did they serve together? How did they get separated? Like, where did they live? I want to just watch an episode of just them hanging out pre all this mess.
Right. A miniseries that takes it in the, you know, a romantic drama, romantic action military drama thing that just follows him for like 4 episodes or so. Yeah.
Like the gritty parts of Battlestar Galactica, the in-between moments where they were like, this is the love story. That. Sure. I want that.
Yeah.
Here they are hanging out in the bunks.
Yeah.
Just a really different take from anything that Chibnall had given us previously within this series. I'm sure, I mean, he's done it within Doctor Who properties, but not to this extent. And it didn't feel disingenuous. So I'm glad for that. I didn't really have evidence that he was capable of doing this sort of thing.
Giving her the has yet unborn child to speak to makes it feel real. She's not just talking to herself. She's not talking back to him, hoping he's going to get these messages. She's talking to someone else who is going on this journey with her, just can't talk back. Mm-hmm. Except for heart emojis.
If you trust the Tamagotchi. Yeah. Yeah.
I have this feeling, so I don't know when they're from, mm-hmm. but I feel like, based on the heart monitor at the one moment, that is actually somehow connected.
Oh, sure.
In there. So
it is real-time monitoring.
It's real-time monitoring, but also somehow sending back the emotions. And that's where you're getting the heart flicks and stuff.
And it's the like smiley the faces.
Pumping and faster and the smiley faces. Because you can, technically, if you were to have like a permanent sonogram going on, you could see the like facial features of what's going on.
Yeah, and they do
there.
Make expressions and things like that. That's all been documented, I don't know whether or not they know how to wink and give you a little hearty thumbs up kind of thing.
Thumbs ups, and it's not just a bunch more thumb sucking and who knows what else, but...
I got a whole emoji pack going on in my belly right now.
So, the mixed memories we got gave us some valuable insights into Dan and a lot more to Vinder. So, how do those shape our opinions of the characters, and were the amount and timing of these... Right.
Yeah. We went through 2 stories with Dan before we knew.
Dan's were weird. We already knew that he had feelings for Di. Mm. I think it served to jump him around a bit, but I was more interested in probably what will be Dan's future with the dude in the caves who we're going to keep seeing until they finally tell us who he is and why he knows who Dan is.
Yeah. Yeah. You had a lot of theories going around about that.
I was going to say, Dan is a great guy and all, but I'm way more interested in Vinder than Dan.
Yeah. Well, and he had a much more compelling story here where, Dan is just some bloke that, likes to go to museums and is very personable and a good guy and this, that, and the other. There's not a whole lot more to him that we've seen, where Vinder has this complicated backstory that, he has a past. He has, he's disgraced, which we find out why that is now. And mm-hmm. so it was a much more interesting thing to learn than just, look, he's had a crush on her for a minute.
Oh, he had a broken off engagement 15 years ago.
Yeah, literally far past.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, doesn't even remember how long and is not interacting with her directly in the present. Mm-hmm.
So the one thing that kind of sticks with me is about the Vinder flashbacks when, when we get the moment where he's, filing the report or whatever, and his commanding officer, Yaz or whoever it was, gives him the moment of like, I can file this or I cannot file this. And he has that, like, don't make me relive this moment. And then he does the right thing and says, file it. And it makes me think, like, I mean, clearly he did not want to be taken away from Bell. Like, that was, he recognized that was the turning point for him. But do we think that, like, he's willing to sacrifice his honor to be with her now? Like, was there a moment of like, maybe it wasn't the right choice? I stood up for what I believed in, but that I would change it now.
Is he going to have to face that choice again before the series is over?
I feel like he would again and again and again do the right thing.
It's just sort of, yeah, it seems intrinsic to his persona. I don't think that there are going to have to be any instances where these things have to be revisited so that steering corrections can be made. I think what was reminding me a lot of the way that these flashbacks were working, as jarring as they were at times, intentionally, and I've got some thoughts on that as to, well, I'll just put it out there now. They worked really well for me because I enjoy that kind of thing. I enjoy having the puzzle, and I know that I'm going to go back and watch it a couple times to really kind of take it apart. That's why, you know, we're as invested in this show, in this property, as we are. I hate to say it, casual fans are being sloughed off of this show in droves because this is so confusing to them. Yep. And every week I'm hearing more and more people saying, you know, I'm trying to stick it out. I feel like I'm watching a good story that I have completely no understanding of, nor will I ever. So I'm just going to wait until somebody else explains it to me, and I'm not going to watch it.
This, I feel like this would work better on like a Netflix model. If, you know, we had 6 episodes and it's like, you're not going to know what happened until episode 5, but you can sit down and watch it all in one Sunday afternoon. And then at the end, you'll get it all. And then you can watch it again the next Sunday afternoon to get what you missed.
Yeah. I was going to say there's going to be a lot of people that don't follow this until the end if they remember to come back to it, because it's not an easy thing to keep up with. It's not an easy thing to keep track of what's going on. And so without having the option of saying, no, I can't leave it off like that, I need to know what's going on, mm-hmm. they're just going to walk away.
Right. To the point about Vinder, I think he had proved in chapter 1 that when the flux was coming, he's like, impossibly, I'm leaving my post. None of you are going to believe this kind of statement. So I feel like he was tested before we knew that he had already proved who he was. And so now we've firmly established his character. This was his episode to learn his backstory, who he is. And now the next episode's where he's involved. It's about closing that loop but maybe to Haley's point, like, how will he be faced in a different way to make the same kind of choice?
See, I know that it is not the route that they would go, but I would love to see the antithesis of a redemption arc, where you have someone who does the right thing, who consistently does the right thing, and gets to a breaking point where he says, I've done the right thing at every turn, and look how horrible it's turned out for me, and basically just flips and becomes a villain. Like, I think he could be a tremendously compelling villain if the moment he gets reunited with Belle, she gets killed off or something like that.
Or if, like, you know, Swarm does whatever he's doing, because we don't know that yet, but it's like, you know, hey, Vinder, you can have a life with Belle, or you can do the right thing and, you know, whatever that is, help the doctor or something and lose out on that life. What choice are you going to make? And we see him, like, team up with Swarm to, you know, to finally get his due.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be a really cool story that they're not going to tell.
Fanfic. You already wrote it.
There you go.
Well, so we finally have that connection between the Division, the fugitive doctor, and our current point in the story. Is this all that we should expect to see of her now that the backstory has been kind of filled in? And, you know, now that 13's kind of scrabbling to find how the memories were erased.
I've been wondering, because, I mean, we all yelped when we saw her reflection in the mirror and heard Joe Martin start to speak again. I mean, that was just, you know, like, but finally, this is the yay! Yeah, we, you know, because we had been, the Division had been referenced in series 12. It was this weird little thing, you know, finding out exactly what she was a fugitive from, and then hearing the Division come back up again now, we thought, okay, where do these pieces fit? And they are fitting quite logically, right? I love the canonical establishment of both the fact that that she is being referred to as the Fugitive Doctor. That is the canonical title for the Doctor now. And that she was, like, effectively an origin point, about as far back as we can really trace it. Post Timeless Child.
That there's some deal that was being made that got hinted at, but that was all you got.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, that she. So we weren't confirmed that Joe Martin's Doctor happened before what we'd seen so far until now. Also, the name the Doctor has been used before William Hartnell's Doctor named himself the Doctor.
Yeah.
Right. The question is, are we going to see any more of her now? Or now that we've said, okay, here's where she fits in more properly so that you can
You can accept it. And now the big concern is, why don't these two sides of the string recognize each other?
I'm just thinking about the fact that since we have no recollection of anything other than the fugitive doctor, anytime someone shows up on screen, it could be like, oh yeah, no, that's a doctor too. That's the doctor. That's the doctor over there. Like, every new guest star could potentially be the doctor.
Dan is the doctor. That's the Dan Jinda.
Oh. I'm just some bloke. I don't know. I mean, I'd love to see her more. I want a miniseries. I want a spinoff series. Just, you know, her duking things out.
One of the specials could just be Ruth Doctor.
Could the Doctor regenerate to a prior regeneration?
Yes.
The curators proved that it can happen.
Yeah, well, so...
David Tennant regenerated into David Tennant. Remember? Because when they recounted all the regenerations, they were like, yeah, he just regenerated into the same
thing.
Yeah,
that was funneling off the regeneration energy, though. That's different.
Hand-wavy fine.
Exactly.
But, so
the blast back, backlash, back, double back, blast... Never mind.
So, we could see her try to force... I'm thinking, like, how does her regeneration...
Her so strongly wanting to connect with that past during regeneration, you know, channels her into that form.
Yeah, so then she...
Or they fuse together. Yeah, I mean, there's any number of reasons they could, like, hand wave it and say that it's good. The question is that going to be what they do moving forward? And that's ultimately going to be up to RTD.
I think we need to see the Fugitive Doctor one more time within this set, because we need to know what they did. The Swarm says they did such an excellent job of hiding you from yourself that you don't remember any of the details. So which they, the Division?
Right. Or the original not Time Lord Gallifreyans?
Right. So we
need to see. That woman with the dropper?
All right. You want to dive into that now? Because
I mean, we can.
That was this was going to be. I was worried that if we got into this one, we'd be stuck in this one for a little while, because this is kind of nerds. So Atropos, as we've all figured out, right, is a reference to
the Fates,
one of the
three
Greek Fates. So if this is the Temple of Atropos, this is just, you know, some sanctuary or some sort of place to praise one of the Fates. What if the cranky lady with the eyedropper, who kept saying, no, nope, you know, the flux was a necessary thing. It was reintroduced to get rid of this universe. This universe is dead. Let it go, Elsa. Let it go. Was another one of the Fates out there and wherever she was, you know, in her lab.
And instead of sewing, she's eyedroppering stuff into it, because it's more of a technical thing.
I thought the Fates were, one of them drew the cord, another one measured it or wove it.
So one of them spins it, one of them measures, and the other cuts.
Right.
So she's the spinner.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it could be the spinner. Yeah, because if she's in there making little adjustments with her little dropper and, like, moving stuff around.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what the end game is with that one. I wouldn't be surprised if it does turn out to be these are the characters that the Fates are based upon, and it just got, like, twisted at some point or something like that. Mm-hmm. I would like the conclude, like, I would like something solid by the end of this to be like, these are who these people, is something I don't want to be a loose thread for somebody else to pick up later on.
Yeah. If we've got another one of these pan-dimensional entities, we like to bring these things into these science fiction shows every once in a while to say, oh, well, you thought this was the biggest power in the room. And then, you know, pull the camera back, and it's all happening within a Petri dish. Oh! And then you just keep moving
it
back.
It was all
back.
A snow globe all along.
Right. So,
well, to go back to sort of what took us on that tangent, how did the Doctor control the entrances and exits from the Time Storm, and why the narrative through all of that to say, like, well, I'm going back in time to this spot and all of that.
I had questions on the second half of that too, as far as all the narrative. I got a theory on it, but as far as her control, plot movement, I mean,
yeah.
she, I think,
because the script demanded
something, something total, sonic screwdriver.
Yeah, it was a complete leap to faith. Of
that's
getting
not one of the fates.
faith. in the first place, right? She made that quick sentence that said, you know, jump and the net will be there, kind of thing, or however she worked the quote. And then threw Dan onto a pedestal. Sorry, Dan, Captain Expendable, you're getting up on that one. I can handle it. You might get burned to a crisp, but hey.
Yeah, and then
but I can't do it by myself.
Yeah, and then she's saying that the Maori and I are connected, and we can handle this, and I just felt...
Well, she says we, like this whole chummy thing, like we're going to work together on this, and she gets in there and proceeds to get berated by and berate them back.
Yeah,
at like a half a dozen instances. So I don't really know how she had any sort of control over it, especially when she kept telegraphing it, saying, I've got to go back to this when and this how, and sucked herself out of the time storm, only to be there and say, they're pulling me back in.
What? Yeah, this was easily the weakest part of the whole episode for me, because it was just there specifically for exposition.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, nothing happened. It's her floating in a void, and you know, occasionally her talking to herself, and occasionally having the Maori talk to her and give her a chance to expositionize more.
And I don't need to have her remind herself 5 to 10 times over the course of one episode of what they're trying to do. Like, oh, gotta save them. Oh, gotta save them. Duh. little duh. Like, yes, that is what you always do. And then mm-hmm. and, like, having her quiet moments, I get that she's in a lot of pressure and is feeling the pull of all of that, but it still felt very much like you could have a quiet moment off screen where you're reminding yourself of that, and we don't need to be watching that.
I think there could have been, you could have cut most of that out of the episode and had just the disjointed flashbacks. Have the doctor occasionally give the exposition to her companions, you know, like to fill them in on, like, this is what's going on. I've only got a minute to talk to you about it, whatever. And give the viewers little breadcrumbs like that throughout the episode, but never once show her in the void until the end when she's talking to the Maori about the solution she's come up with. And I think that would have worked so much better.
Here's my thought on it. I think they may have actually originally scripted and maybe even shot that, or at least had it, you know, because they wouldn't necessarily have to shoot it so much, because they kept putting Jodie into her companion scenes as these disembodied force ghosts. But mm-hmm. but my thought is that since everything that was being done within the time storm and her going at the Maori and so forth was all done, obviously, you know, the post-production green screen or what have you, that maybe they planned on doing much more and having it more of a show don't tell when they thought it was going to be an 8 or even a 10 episode season. So these would be the areas where he had to smash some stories down a bit. Maybe this, because it was so whip-crack from cut to cut to cut to cut to cut, and what felt to me like, you know how when you have dreams that are based on memories and you're sort of going back to moments, and but the details are weird, you know where you're supposed to be and you know the people you're supposed to be talking to, but this person isn't quite the right person because your brain just kind of just says, ah, I'm going to be stuck on random for this evening, and gives you the details wrong. That's kind of what a lot of these flashback sequences felt like to me. Because it's like having a dream where you're working your current job and have your own family environment, but you're living in your childhood house at the time, and it doesn't seem weird to you until you wake up. That's what it kind of felt like to me. They probably could have tinkered with that stuff for almost a full episode and had another episode or installment or chapter or what have you that guided all that through, so that there were more pieces at the end of each one of these little something strange is going on here, or Vinder saying, you weren't the one across the desk from me, or the doctor saying, you know, why are you wearing those strange clothes? And those would get teased out a little further so that we'd get an understanding of what's going on without having to pull 13 back into the time storm to have an exposition fest.
That would make sense and give a little bit more reason as to why they felt the need to explain it, because they had to chop out maybe a little bit more of those scenes. And it does put a little bit more pressure on the explanation going on in between them. Like, oh, I'm stuck here. I can't help you. I don't know where you are.
Right.
And maybe we'll see a little bit more of that play out, because we know that Yaz was sent to some part of her future. She didn't remember any of it. And so for her, the angel being slipped in, which obviously now comes back to something else, like maybe some of those types of things needed to be called out to say, hey, this isn't my past. This is my future. But how do you do that if it's, you don't want to leave that being the only one-liner where they're actually talking about the thing that's going on.
Right.
All that just to say, though, is it kind of irks me, though, because it's like an improv scene where you're not supposed to talk about what you're doing. And that's all they did for that middle section was talk about exactly what was happening. And those always feel so forced.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with both you, Jay, you saying that this was like the one aspect of it that had you kind of pushing back, saying, no, now I'm aware that I'm being told a story rather than just experiencing a story. And this is where the threads show. In the seams,
I wonder if this was an even more confusing episode and they added a bunch of dialogue in to try and, like, explain what was happening. There's,
like, maybe it didn't screen well.
The one line that still sticks with me and irks me to this point is the doctor being in the time storm at some point and saying out loud, oh no, I'm being sucked back to the temple of Atropos. And then you cut to a scene at the temple and you lose nothing.
So what is the connection between the flux and the feasting particles, blue glowy things? And how much of this is in any real control by the Ravagers?
What did Swarm say specifically when he was talking about them as they were? Because they weren't, it didn't seem like he was necessarily in complete control of them, other than just kind of leveraging the fact that they're...
I mean, just this whole thing, it seems like he's taking advantage of an opportunity more than in control of anything.
I think he said that it was parts of the uncontrollable time that seeped out, and so they were trying to, quote, correct what was not supposed to be now that space has been...
He said, tiny fragments of temporal destruction, which will erode whatever they touch. You may have repaired, but time was unleashed for long enough. The damage is done, and if the flux wrecked space, then we have disrupted the flow of time, however briefly.
And that was an interesting statement, specifically about he considers it a success just to have disrupted the flow of time briefly. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole idea of the rock in the middle of the river kind of thing. And the water will continue to flow around, but he has caused some sort of a diversion. That, to him, is a victory of some sort.
Big enough ripples.
Yeah. So I just, it makes me wonder about the end game. If he's looking for overall destruction, I don't know if he's necessarily achieved that, because as we've seen with Vinder's home planet and other places where we've flashed forward to, there are some planets that didn't get imploded. They were just devastated and are in pieces with this blue, whatever, these particles.
Yeah, my thought on that is that those were the planets that it started to munch and didn't finish the munch. And so that's why there's ash and the rock sort of, and the buildings were almost like cheese grater now, so you can see through them. But
right, so they got poured over, but we're not, I don't know, I just don't understand why some...
The way that he described it made me think that these things, the fragments of time or whatever, they're basically the antithesis of the flux. Like, they're two opposing forces of destruction.
Okay.
Or one is like a force of spatial destruction and the other is a force of temporal destruction.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Yeah. So the flux is space.
So they're the opposite sides of the same coin.
Right, because there was that seemed to be very important to Swarm, was the idea of time having its power, but it can never defeat space.
That wasn't Swarm. That was in the flashback.
Oh. I thought that was flashback Swarm though.
Yes, that was OG Swarm.
Yeah,
but why does OG Swarm look different than this?
Because
time
he
Swarm?
Because he evolves crustier. Differently on the souls that he that, or when he takes a life form. Remember, every time he was taking a life form, he was growing some crystals out of his face and things like that. He looks a little differently on every iteration.
Mm.
So
people have more technology in them now, so he's got more crystals instead of being the fleshy mob that he was before?
Plus a much snappier suit. I mean, his fashion sense
and his teeth are so much better now.
So shiny.
Yeah.
What's the basis of this, the Timeless Parents fan theory? And the repercussions, if it's even slightly valid.
All right. So this is not necessarily like a baked noodle kind of thing, but it's an interesting theory. And there have been a number of people who have come to this conclusion entirely on their own, not having read it in other articles and such like that being posited, that Bell and Vinder are the Timeless Child's parents. They are the origin of this whole thing because they are so whacked out of their natural sequence of time and have gone through all of whatever they have experienced or have been displaced out of their time or what have you, that their child becomes the first of the timeless race.
So this is another River Song story then?
This is the doctor's parents.
Yeah, but it's kind of a parallel development kind of thing. River became kind of like a Time Lord, like, you know, what is it? Convergent evolution because of her exposure in utero to the forces in the TARDIS. The same thing happens here because of exposure to the stuff at the temple, the flux, all these things. That's how you get a creature like the Doctor.
Right. The theory takes it one step further and says that there's something hinky going on with Vinder to begin with, because when he's making his station reports from his post, it's like report 15,700, whatever. So even if he was making reports many, many times a day for days on end, that he would have been stationed there for like hundreds of years, like the way they were working it out.
So that leads me to a question I was wondering is, how did Vinder know what a TARDIS was? Are they maybe Time Lords already? And what if the Yaz character outside the Atropos the first time is actually Bell? Because they seem to be pretty friendly. So Vinder would be the only one who he appeared as he really was. But the flip is that he didn't recognize the Doctor the first time to the second time because it was Fugitive Doctor and now it's 13.
Well, no, because I think the team that was with the Fugitive Doctor was actually all the dog people. Like, we saw
all
that.
All Lupari?
The, yeah, I think they were
but
all Lupari.
Only for Dan.
He's the only one who pulled the weapon. But it was like, it's like snapping out of the dream logic for a second.
I don't think it would have worked because one of them, I think it was Yaz, made the dog comment.
And she wouldn't make a dog comment.
Which, by the way, was a pretty funny comment. But
it's I liked it a lot.
That aside, yeah.
That was funny.
But no, I don't think that was Vinder back then. I think it was another division officer and things. But I don't know what Vinder's, like, what is, what organization does he actually serve?
Is it division? We aren't told.
Mm. Yeah, they never say.
It's something with a constitution. But is it the same group that the people we saw at the very beginning that were guarding Swarm are in?
Mm.
Or is that a separate
group? That's a good question.
Because I wonder, did he have that station at some point? Was he exposed to whatever forces were imprisoning Swarm?
Mm.
And what was the battle that he flew through? It was some kind of fire.
Right. Well, we've got a little bit more time to be able to connect some of these things, if they get connected at all. And I say this a lot, when we get really, really complex stories, I don't mind unanswered questions a lot of the time. Some key things, yeah, I want some major pieces to fit together. But
yeah, you don't have to completely fill in Vinder's backstory. The important part of his story is what we're witnessing now. So leave some stuff open for somebody to write a novel down the road or have him show up again later and fill it in. Mm-hmm. We don't need that right now, and frankly, I don't want them to take up valuable real estate in such a short series. to give us that when it's not really pertinent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because then you can't have a spinoff and give Jacob Anderson more Doctor Who airtime, which is fine.
Exactly.
What else is Big Finish going to write?
Yeah. So, flipping it a little bit to the Doctor, why is the Doctor so short and sharp with Yaz? It's really been bothering me this episode. So even when Yaz is providing some help or trying to talk to her on a bad pun, human level, trying to level with her and say, hey, I'm here for you. I tell you about me, but you don't tell me about you. Why is she treating Yaz that way and shutting her down and not letting her speak and cutting her off, treating her like a child?
While she lets Dan ask all the ridiculous childlike questions. What's that? Why can't I just go punch him in the nose? Well, let me go get Di. I can get it. He's right there. The passenger standing right there. I can do this.
It's because Yaz is asking the difficult questions that the Doctor doesn't have answers to. But yeah, I agree. Like that, if the time storm part was the weakest point, this was the part that rankled me more than anything. Was just how she's been treating Yaz throughout the entirety.
Unless that's intentional. That they're taking this this friction between the two characters and amplifying it so that we can just show that the Doctor's emotional fallibility is still there, because she spent two seasons downplaying everything. You know, it's not important. You know, don't worry about me. I'm more worried about you and the situation and so forth. And now she's tapped into something where there is a mystery of an enormous magnitude about herself that has been robbed of her. And it's all consuming in her mind at that very moment. And anything else coming in is just mosquitoes in her ear.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like it.
No, I can't say that you don't, but... But I get it, if that's what they're doing with the Doctor at the moment, is just showing the Doctor's never been has had this opportunity for introspection and personal research.
It just, it will hurt even more if there is a moment at which Yaz finally realizes that the Doctor's been put on a pedestal in her mind, and if that all comes crashing down to her detriment, so something bad happens to Yaz because of all of this, then it will hurt that much more, because she's also been treated poorly.
Maybe they flip it and Yaz becomes the villain.
You're just dying.
That would be this. Awesome.
Jay is pushing hard for somebody to suddenly say, that's it. Give me that mustache box. Well,
but it could be Dan who flips because no, I'm just
kidding. I've been playing stupid all along. I'm actually the master.
No, you know who could be the master though? That guy in the top hat.
Yep. Oh, Mr. Tunnel Rat.
Yep,
Mr. Mind Guy.
Yep, he's been in every episode so far. That was like
Dan's ancestor or something.
No. No, that is not
what I mean. You misunderstand me, sir.
You misunderstand me, sir. No. So I recognized that he, poor choice of words, I saw that he recognized Dan when they bumped backs in the tunnel. He turned and said, why are you dallying here? Like he knew him. You seemed to think that maybe it was the time shifty shade.
Wearing somebody else's face.
I think it was Dan, and that somehow Dan goes back to that time. And so... either it was because of being touched by the angel later, because we haven't gotten there yet.
That's a different show.
Or because they were still being in their timelines, right? They're still embedded.
Yeah.
He can't be embedded that far back unless he was embedded into an ancestor of his own. So it's not that he had some stuff to do way back when in those tunnels, which was what, like 200 years before? Okay. 1820? But it's, yeah.
Well, all right. So there's something that monkeys with that, and that's that Captain Muttonchops had a futuristic weapon in his hands that he was shooting at post flux particles.
No, he was shooting at something different because
he said
he like yeah
yeah
what
He said that it was something different. Like, that was not what he was firing at.
Okay.
He can't remember what the exact line is. Around the corner. Dan says, oh, they're coming. They're coming. They hide.
Mm-hmm.
The particles fly past. Dan says, oh, is that what you were shooting at?
Yeah.
And he says, no, it's something else. But here they come back.
Right. But I'm just saying, but those particles were there, which meant that we were dealing with something after Flux had blown through. Right,
but the Flux, I think, went all through time.
Okay,
right.
But my question is, when Dan starts asking him, "Oh, we're just under Edge Hill," and he says, "No, we're very far, very very far indeed." That they are at that point way in the future under Liverpool, and that Captain Mutton Chops is now sometime in like the 54th and a half century or wherever.
Hence the Master and the TARDIS is buried under the docks. Oh, okay.
All right, we are getting seriously off the rails all here. Right.
Well, then let me ask you just one last thing, because this is going to segue into what we're going to be talking about in a week to follow. And that is when Yaz gets back into the TARDIS and has her Lonely Assassins moment, where she's trying to play Lonely Assassins on her phone. And clearly the angel bloopifies out of her phone and does not go after them, goes immediately to the TARDIS controls. And, you know, everybody knows how to fly a TARDIS these days. You know, the show's been around for 60-some-odd years, and everybody knows how to fly this thing.
Except Vinder.
Well, Vinder just does the whoa. No,
he asked if he could.
He asked if he could. Yep. He's, can you teach me to pilot it?
Nope.
No, he didn't ask to be taught. He just said, can I fly it?
Yeah.
Didn't want to be taught. Oh, I thought he said, can you teach me?
No, I'm pretty sure he just said, can I fly it? Like, he's okay. Like, I'm pretty sure said, can I fly this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but now, and they changed a line, which was unfortunate, because I think they kind of missed a trick to say that the angels have the control of the phone box. But my thought is this, because that angel was messed up.
Yep.
Split across the face. This angel has been through something and didn't go for them. It went for the controls. So I'm wondering, has the Flux also affected whatever the home planet or nebula or wherever in creation the Weeping Angels are, they gather, and it has affected them as well, and they are unable to help themselves because just the sheer nature of what they are or what they feed on, more maybe they're starving or who knows, and they go and seek the only source of help they can possibly find, and that would be their hated but much needed doctor.
Yeah, and I was also thinking that we know that the angel's ability to feed very much depends on a linear flow of time. Like, that's kind of how it works. So maybe they ally with the doctor to fix whatever chaotic thing is happening to time, because their feeding grounds are no longer habitable for them if time is raging out of control.
Yeah, maybe they're not getting anything, actually. They don't get any sustenance from trying to time bloop somebody.
Yeah.
Because they're not in their proper time to begin with, or that they're just robbed of that, if it's Artron energy or whatever it is that they feed from. Yeah. Oh, it wouldn't be Artron energy. You gather that by actually traveling through time.
Well, we'll find out here shortly, because next week we're going to be talking about the Village of the Angels.
Yes. Oh, point of order. I pulled a Julie and stopped the next time sequence.
He said, I don't want to see it. And I was like, you can't play my cards.
I had to, because I have reached that frustration point with how cliffhangers are being handled right before showing me scenes from next week.
And well, somebody talked over that moment when I was watching the episode, so I didn't see it either.
Excellent. So Jay can talk to himself. We'll all take our headphones off for about 45 seconds while Jay says something about the week to come.
Nope. Honestly, the Next Time trailer was actually fairly... No, it was fairly good for being a Next Time trailer, because it didn't really show anything. You saw, obviously, you saw some angels, which you kind of knew was coming.
Didn't know it was coming.
Oh, spoiler alert. I know,
spoilers. Geez. I'm sorry.
I thought Village of the Angels, they were just going back to Los Angeles. L.A.
Yeah. L.A.
No, but I mean, this one was one of the least offensive that I've seen so far, so... Okay. Good on them for doing it right this time.
Such a great bar to leap over. Although I did say the only thing that I saw right before I slammed the thing off was I saw Claire's face. So it's good
yes.
that you know, since she was the one that we saw actually get touched, that we would get to see either where she went or where she came from or why she knows. When we saw her get being pursued by one in episode one or chapter one, it didn't look like she knew.
She started to think like, she knew, oh, there, this is an important moment. I've met the doctor. This is Halloween. She knew Halloween meant something. Mm-hmm. But after that, she was.
But she knew not to look away from.
Correct.
The yeah. angels. Okay.
She's yeah. a plant.
So she had met the doctor previously, and the doctor probably told her about the angels.
Right.
But, yeah.
Okay.
So we'll, it's possible we see this full circle now.
She will not have yet we'll been, has done, met, but
will not, yes, has
met yet to for been, could, the thing.
Never.
All right. Well, this has been episode 448 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next time, this is Jay saying, who the hell are you, and what are you doing in my reflection?
And this is Kier saying, temporal hazing. You know, I haven't had to deal with that stuff since time college.
This is Julie saying, who's that sexy girl with the nimble fingers?
And this is Haley saying, lost causes are my speciality.
We'll see you next week.
Allons-y.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going? You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
Jacob Hansen. Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2021. We'll see you next week.